get up and do my thing. I want to get into it, man, you know. Like, you know I'm the man, don't you? Can I count it off? 1, 2, 3, 4.
You're listening to the Church Politics Podcast with Michael Ware and Justin Gibney, where you can get in-depth political analysis from a Christian worldview. Transcend partisanship and political ideology with us as we seek true discipleship in the public square.
This is the Church Politics Podcast with Michael Ware and Justin Gibney. We are going to try and get through recording this podcast before another tweet from our president adds something else to our lineup. Yeah. But that may be difficult to do. But Justin, we'll do our best.
We will do our best. I'm glad to be here, and I've been having a good couple of days. But I'm gonna be honest with you, Brother Weir. I had to kind of stay away from social media a little bit. It is a mess. It is completely toxic right now, and I had to say, you know what? Let me back up off this and focus on playing with my boys or doing something else, because this is just frustrating.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So we're gonna get to that, and there's a lot to discuss, a lot to go over. You know, there's so much to cover about how President Trump has inserted himself in such a profoundly negative and corrosive way with the protests and with NBA, NFL. He's going to be, criticizing, U.S. handball players pretty soon. I mean, he's just taking on everybody. But first, you know, we talked with Eugene last week, Eugene Scott, the CNN analyst, Washington Post. We were so grateful to have him on. He gave us a really good preview of what we saw last week as healthcare developed. And there were some developments since last week. I feel like we should have like a jingle, like a repeal and replace jingle or something, since we end up talking about healthcare just about every week. But Justin, they're taking another shot at it, but it took something of a, if not a death blow, certainly, it's this newest effort to repeal Obamacare is on its heels after Senator John McCain, once again, although with less drama this time, indicated that he would not be supporting the bill. Do you think Republicans are just going to keep on going at this thing?
They're determined. You got to say something has to be said about their determination. That. Yeah, something has to be said about their determination. They're going to keep coming back. And I think part of the reason is they know they can't go home and say that we didn't try as hard as we could to get rid of Obamacare. Because as we do know, and we've talked about this before, with the premiums rising, there are problems with Obamacare. Yeah. So I'll give them that. But I think part of it, too, and I've said this ad nauseum, is to really get their tax form off like they want to. I think they need to have this out the way first if they really want to cut taxes. And so just so everybody knows, we're talking about the Graham-Cassidy bill, which is a healthcare bill from Lindsey Graham, who's a senator in South Carolina, and Bill Cassidy, who's the senator in Louisiana. And again, it's the latest attempt by the grand old party to repeal Obamacare. Now, they're saying repeal Obamacare, but Senator Rand Paul would beg to differ. He's actually saying that he's against it because it doesn't actually repeal and replace Obamacare. Technically, he would be right. If we get into the substance of what's going on here, one of the main things we're going to have to look at is Medicaid. Medicaid is something everybody's worried about with these GOP bills. And because, as we know, Medicaid provides about health care for about 20% of Americans, including 40% of children. Now, it's dealt with in this bill. This bill would give the Graham-Cassidy bill would give states control over how they spend these funds. So now, you know, those funds are the majority of the control is in the hands of the federal government, because if they're federal funds, this would kind of kick it down to the states and would actually cut Medicaid over time. Mm. So that's one of the parts. Then we can get into pre-existing conditions, which is another issue that a lot of people are, for good reason, worried about with these Republican healthcare bills. This particular bill would give states the ability to waive pre-existing condition requirement if they were able to persuade the Department of Health and Human Services that they would maintain access to adequate, affordable coverage. I think right. the critics are right here when they suspect that the standard would probably be set too low, if not this just being here for show. So right. nobody believes, you know, if they can waive it and people don't really believe a lot of Republicans want to keep it, it might just be too easy to do that.
Yep. Yeah, there's some difficulty with these bills, right? Because once again, so far, this bill has not been scored by the CBO. And that is intentional. That's strategic on their part. And part of it, I get it, right? Because you take away just the individual mandate, and the CBO scores that as millions of people no longer having insurance because they're no longer penalized for not having insurance. So, I get that Republicans feel like, politically, sort of from a public relations standpoint, the CBO score kind of cooks things against them. They have some other PR issues as well, which, you know, looking back on this weekend, it just kind of hit me, Justin. If there was a theme to this week, it was the influence that celebrities and entertainers and people outside of politics are having on the political process. So you have Jimmy Kimmel, who drove, you know, 3-4 days of public debate around healthcare. He spent multiple segments on his late night show talking about this. I heard someone else comment, you know, this whole idea of a Kimmel test applied to repeal and replace healthcare, which is basically making sure that even with repeal, Kimmel's kid and others in similar situations would be covered still. That was created by Senator Cassidy, the author of the bill, and yet his own bill, by most reports, fails to meet that standard. And so Jimmy Kimmel went pretty hard, and it really drove the conversation. So, you know, there's a narrow conversation we could have about healthcare. That's important. I'm also interested in all of the various inputs that politicians have to consider that really weren't so viable, you know, 20, 30 years ago. They don't just have to worry about what Chuck Schumer is saying about their healthcare bill. They got to worry about, you know, what Jimmy Kimmel, who has an audience of millions every night, is saying.
That's true. Now some would say, now that's right, true. Now, some would say on the conservative side, I heard some people saying, well, actually, Schumer was kind of behind this because Jimmy Kimmel got his talking points from Schumer. And somehow this came out that, you know, he had talked to Schumer's team before kind of making his comments and hadn't actually read the bill himself, but was dependent on those talking points. I'm not sure. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Schumer is a very shrewd operator. So we'll have to see. But your point is well taken. Either way, Jimmy Kimmel played a huge role in this. And he seems to be coming off very much so as an objective person that's saying, look, right. I'm applying it in a real way. How it affects people. This is how it's affecting my family. And I let you create the test. Yeah. This is your test and you're failing your own test. Something else that I think worries people about this is that you would no longer, you know, this bill would no longer force insurers to cover essential health benefits. So these are things like maternity care, mental health, prescription drugs, emergency care, and so on. I think the folks who support this would say, well, people choose their own. So if they don't need maternity care, why would they have to get it if they don't plan on having children? Or if they don't need, you know, want emergency care, that's something that they get to choose. The idea being that this would keep costs down. And so there's some dispute there too, but just more and more issues that really need to be addressed here. And in a way, when I look at this bill, a lot of it seems to me like they're just kicking the can to the states. You know, when it comes to, we've already talked about when it comes to pre-existing conditions, when it comes to Medicaid, that's all going to be handled by the state. So it's almost these senators saying, hey, you guys take care of this. We need to get this passed, get our cut so we can kind of move on. But that's not good. I'm not sure that's necessarily good for the American people, because all you're doing is pushing these big, long fights down to the state level. And you're not really providing any certainty for the people who need it. And I think that's important.
And Justin, you know, that touches on, you know, the aspect of this debate that's really, it's really been coming home for me, which is you see so many people throwing their hands up in the air, and on the progressive side, you know, I think a level of anger, impatience. You know, I saw people saying, you know, what could possibly be their rationale for, you know, pursuing this bill other than, you know, hurting families and this and that. And, you know, it's just important to remember, like, this is actually, to me, more of a conventional political disagreement, which I think we're not used to, you know, having, you know, someone in the White House that doesn't have really well thought out policy views. But look, Republicans want to repeal Obamacare because they have an ideological view that government is going to be more harmful than helpful. And the more control federal government has, the less liberty folks are going to have and the less control over their own lives. And that's a policy debate that I think, we should have. We've been having it for decades. But it's almost as if progressives are worried about having the debate on that level. So they have to launch these like, you know, Republicans are trying to, you know, kill your auntie kind of debates, right. Which, you know, isn't right. Like none of this is surprising. Like they don't like the federal government. Obamacare involves the federal government. And so they're against it. Like it's not, I don't understand why we got to pretend there's some mystery or ulterior motive to this whole thing.
That's right. And there's a lot of people speaking who are uninformed. I forgot who said this quote, but I love it. It's like, if you don't know the other side of the argument, you really know little of your own. And so when I go on social media and hear some of the commentary that we see every day, it tells me that you don't really understand the conservative point of view. You take what people have interpreted for you and use that and the talking points and all the things we hear all the time. But do you really understand the point of view? Now, I'm not saying that you would think that point of view was right.
Right.
But you would be able to address it in a way that was more informed rather than just saying, oh, they don't care if people die. They want kids to die and all this other stuff. It's just not helpful. I don't know of anybody who feels this way. Now, I can say that I think many of them are not being completely responsible or compassionate with how they go about it. I'm not going to say that they don't care if people die.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And I think that's right. The last thing I want to touch on this healthcare debate, you know, and this podcast will air after. So we're recording on Sunday. Podcast will come out on Tuesday. On Monday night, unless something changes, there will be a debate on CNN with Graham and Cassidy, the Republican co-sponsors of this bill, and then Bernie Sanders and Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, senator from Minnesota. There are a number of things interesting about this and the reaction to it. First, there were all these reports about, you know, quote unquote, Democratic strategists who were concerned that, you know, when we're supposed to be defending Obamacare, that the attention would be going to Bernie and single payer. And my two comments to that are, well, then why is like I agree there's some concern to be had there, but half of the there are now, I believe, over a dozen Democratic senators, and it may be much more than that. A number of Democratic senators, have come out to sponsor single payer. So don't put this all on Bernie. And then second of all, and I think we've talked about this, just I love Amy Klobuchar, and the fact that all these Democratic strategists would rather anonymously give quotes about how scared they were about Bernie than say, look, Amy Klobuchar is the only Democrat who's going to be on the stage that night. She's the one representing the Democratic Party. Amy Klobuchar is a moderate senator from Minnesota. She's going to do a great job. But this whole idea that Amy Klobuchar, who's been in the Senate for a while, is like some understudy to Bernie Sanders is just ridiculous and you know, really a little offensive. Again, especially since she's the only Democrat who will be on the stage that night.
Yeah, I saw those criticisms too, and I felt the same way. Some other things I heard is like, why is he giving the Republicans a platform to talk about this? Like, they didn't want to debate the issue. And I'm like, if you don't want to debate the issue, then you don't need to. You playing the wrong sport. I applaud Bernie Sanders for debating this issue and having this conversation. It needs to be had. If you truly believe your policy is the best, then you have to have this. In fact, this should be the norm. Shout out for Senator Bernard Sanders for bringing this to the table. Now, as you said earlier, I think we got to get into Bernie's bill too, because he had 15 other Democrats sign on or co-sponsor his single payer healthcare bill that he was putting out there. Now, for those, most of you probably already know, but single payer is basically Medicare for everyone. It's healthcare where the financing would be handled by a single public agency or a single quasi-public agency.
Right.
And so when they were presenting this bill, I think this was 2 or 3 weeks ago, Bernie Sanders said this. He said, "Do we as a nation join the rest of the industrialized world and guarantee comprehensive health care to every person as a human right?" So that's what he's calling to question. That's what you're probably going to hear coming up in the next day or so in this debate. Now, this is huge for Bernie, though, because he's controlling the debate on healthcare. The fact that 15 other Democrats, including potential presidential candidates, co-sponsored this single payer bill with him means that he has moved the needle in a very serious way. Now, everybody doesn't agree with it, because you'll find that Schumer and Pelosi, they have not signed on to this. And I've seen some good commentary on this particular bill. Not all of it has been flattering for Bernie. Jonathan Chait, who's a very good progressive writer, he said this. He said the barrier to single payer is not the American health is that the American healthcare system has been built by accident around employer-based insurance. The rhetoric of single payer concentrates its moral emphasis on people who lack insurance at all. But the barrier to single payer healthcare is the people who already have coverage.
Right.
Designing a single payer system means not only covering the uninsured, but financing the cost of moving the 155 million Americans who have employer based insurance onto Medicare. He says that this is not just a detail to be worked out. It's the entire problem.
Right.
The impossibility of this barrier is why Lyndon Johnson gave up trying to pass universal health care bill and instead confined his legislation to the elderly. It's why Barack Obama left the employer-based system intact and created alternate coverage for non-elderly people outside of it.
Yeah.
Very, very good conversation and article by Jonathan Chait. And really, he's saying this bill is cool, but it doesn't really answer any of the hard questions about why we don't already have single payer.
Yeah. And so I, you know, like so many issues that seem to be picking up steam, it's almost a, it's like they're embraced before they could even be discussed.
Right.
So I know the single payer has been an issue in academic and activist circles of the left. But for there to be such a rush to this without a full discussion, which is maybe what we're going to have now, but I think it's significant. I will say the other thing, Justin, is, you know, I do think people are right to have, I do think, you know, the strategists are right to have some hesitation, some concern, that after decades and decades of Democrats trying to advance universal health care and all of the rhetoric, all of the political costs, everything that went into passing the Affordable Care Act, that not only is there going to be a bit of fatigue among the American people for, you know, a new Democratic effort to do what they told everyone was going to be done with the last one, but also a kind of like, can we even take them seriously? Can we even take them seriously that when they told us this bill was going to, you know, change everything, and then they're coming back to us not even a decade later saying that, as you pointed out, Justin, not only do we need more health reform, but the health reform that we need now is a complete undoing of the system that Obamacare affirmed and upheld.
That like swallowed it, up, really swallowed up a lot of the time that he was in office.
Yeah,
it swallowed up so much time defending it and all that stuff. It took a long time.
Yeah, and so I do think it's a little problematic, maybe not substantively. So maybe there's a substantive case to be made that that a bigger overhauling of the healthcare system is needed to have something that's sustainable, serves as many people as possible. But just politically, and just for the feeling of the country, for the party, and not just the party, but many of the same people who, it's not like we have brand new leadership. It's not like Chuck Schumer wasn't, wasn't around before. It wasn't like Bernie Sanders wasn't around before. For some of these people to go back to the American people and say, we want you to engage in another multi-year debate on health reform is a, I'm not sure that's politically helpful for the party.
It was political posturing, I think, for some of these prospective presidential candidates in 2020. They didn't want Bernie Sanders to get out ahead of them, and so they just went along with it. So I see where it's problematic. I think my response to these strategists was, you should have said something about this before you had 15 of your leaders co-sign this legislation. Right. After that was done, you know the party had basically taken its stance, and now you have to debate it. So their commentary I get, but it's a little too late after you've taken that stand.
Yeah. Well, Justin, so on September 23rd, at Real Donald Trump tweeted, going to the White House is considered a great honor for a championship team. Steph Curry is hesitating, therefore invitation is withdrawn! Exclamation point. Later that day, he tweeted, if a player wants the privilege of making millions of dollars. So, I mean, it's important to really process and take in each word of these tweets, because each one says so much. If a player wants the privilege of making millions of dollars in the NFL or other leagues, he or she should not be allowed to disrespect our great American flag, and then parenthetical, or country, and should stand for the national anthem. If not, you're fired. Find something else to do. And this is a rope point, but when he's not antagonizing Kim Jong-un and treating nuclear diplomacy like it was an episode of The Apprentice, he is tweeting about NFL and NBA players, sometimes naming them specifically. And then just finally, at this rally that he held in Alabama, which I think is significant, that he would be saying this in a state with so much history that is carried into today with racial prejudice and injustice. They've recently just been going through court cases that they've been specifically targeting disenfranchising black voters. So it's not like this is he went to Alabama to say this, and he called Colin Kaepernick a SOB and said that if players were kneeling during the national anthem, wouldn't it be great if the owners said to get that SOB off the field? So that's where we are. Just I don't know if there are other aspects you usually do a great job of laying out context. I don't know if I miss anything, but that's what we've been seeing over the last few days.
Look here, man. I'm going to put it like this here. We have to talk about this.
Yeah.
People are right to respond. But honestly, I don't even want to be talking about this right now.
Right.
We should be talking about solving our healthcare issue.
Yeah.
We should be talking about Puerto Rico and what's going on down there. We should be talking about infrastructure, because when we see all these floods and all this stuff going on, it's showing you that our infrastructure around the country is in terrible condition. We should be talking about how women in Flint, Michigan have seen their fertility rates drop 12%.
Yes.
We should be talking about criminal justice And the crazy thing about this is that this started based on a conversation about criminal justice. Mm-hmm. But I don't even know if this conversation is about criminal justice anymore. Yeah. With all the silly comments that the president is making and everybody feeling like they have to clap back in the same way, we've almost forgotten what we are talking about.
That's right. Yeah.
And so these huge issues where people are suffering right next to us, folks are spending their time and energy going back and forth about this stuff that I'm not going to say is completely insignificant. If y'all go make a statement, I'm not mad at anybody who made a statement because right. they were put in a position where they had to. I get that. I'm not mad at you. But as I said before, over and over, let's get to the policy.
Yeah.
Let's stop applauding every time somebody right. says something just as nasty to Trump as he yeah. said before. I'm not trying to debate everything that he said. Let's move on and try to get something done. So we don't even know what we're talking about anymore. And I said this earlier when we first started this episode, I had to just step back from social media a little bit in the last few days because it's just toxic. I mean, people are focused on all the wrong things when that list of issues, and that's just a short list of issues that we could really be talking about that are affecting people every day, that people are suffering through, that our Congress and others aren't doing anything to solve right now because they can't work together. But we're talking about all these comments over and over again. So again, I'm not saying that we shouldn't respond or people shouldn't make statements. I think that is necessary, but it's sad that we've been distracted by this silliness.
Well, and right. I mean, this is what happens when you have a politics and political leaders that view their jobs and their roles and their sphere of authority as sort of all consuming, that they just think that they can just swallow up all of, you know, every aspect of our lives. So, I mean, it is especially this is a concern I share with conservatives about, you know, this idea that politics is not ultimate. Unfortunately, what we're seeing with a Republican president who, a lot of the people who make this point didn't vote for Donald Trump. But what we're seeing is, a narcissist. And I don't say that as like an underhanded attack. Just what else do you call the most powerful man in the world who views tweeting at Steph Curry and calling former NFL football player SOB at a presidential rally an appropriate use of his time and influence? Like there's just no other explanation for it. And so to me, that the answer is part of the answer is yes, we need to speak out against the substance of what's happening, but more broadly, we need to we need to push politicians out of the spaces in our lives and in our culture where they do not belong, where they have no, we did not elect Donald Trump or any other politician to be commenting on sports entertainers. We didn't invite them into our lives so that they could be, you know, on late night TV every night or any of these other, the sort of pop culturification of our politics. And we really need to be pushing back on that. And it's most powerful when you push back on a politician who's doing something that advances your own politics. Because, right, that's right. It's one thing for me to say I don't want Donald Trump to be tweeting about sports. Well, I don't like a lot of what Donald Trump does, but it's something else when Trump supporters will say, look, I voted for him. Maybe even they still support him. But what is he doing inserting himself into the hiring decisions of the football league? Like whether you're a Liberty person, whether you're a First Amendment person, whether you're a small government person, like that breaks all the rules. Like any there's no ideology of no respected ideology of federal government that says that the head of state should be commenting on what owners should do about their players. And it's we really need to push back on this encroaching of politics into our lives.
We do, and it's tough. Because it's tough to draw the line. I'm glad you brought this up because I was thinking about it earlier today. And I think entertainers should be able to speak out. I think they should speak out. I think they have a platform and use it when you have that platform. But there's a part of me that says, because they're so intertwined right now, our policy, politics, and entertainment, I don't know where one ends and the other begins.
Hmm.
Yeah. I was on a chat with some people, and I think Kobe Bryant or somebody else made a comment calling, you know, saying something about Donald Trump, and then LeBron called him a bum, and everybody's like, oh man, they're woke. I'm like, that's great, but I don't know what that brings to the conversation.
Right.
I don't know how that pushes us further. And I understand, because being in politics actually helps you understand PR in entertainment to some extent.
Yeah.
That people will say stuff that brings them attention. So I'm not questioning anybody I named, but I'm saying there are some entertainers out there who have smart enough PR people that will say, hey, say this, this, and this, they'll love it and they're going to eat this up.
Right.
Right. So you have people playing a part in a real process when they're really just doing it to boost, you know, to boost their stats and to boost their PR. So it's tough. And we talk ad nauseum about how Trump is destroying our discourse, how he is tainting the entire process. We go back and forth on that in a real way, and we should continue to do that. And I'm primarily concerned when we have this conversations about that, because he is the president.
Right.
But secondarily, I'll say this. I'm concerned about the fact that he has provided an opportunity and provided cover for those who want to fuel the fire on the other side.
Those
who want to use his extremism as a justification for their own extremism.
Right.
You see, Trump's election, in a weird way, was not only a win for the far right, but strangely, it was also a win for the far left.
Yeah.
You know, for those whose ideas were too extreme until Trump's madness made them seem necessary.
That's right.
And I worry about that, because I see these people going under the radar, doing all these things, throwing, you know, fuel on the fire, and nobody's really noticing it. And that can be just as damaging as what we're seeing from our president.
Yeah. And it's Justin, I couldn't agree with you more. Part of the environment that gets cultivated here is, you know, you say anything that, you know, is like, well, you know, maybe what Republicans are doing here isn't all that bad, or even, you know, even maybe, you know, approving of something that the Republicans do. And then, which side are you on? Why are you giving cover to those folks? And it's just like, look, I'm not trying to give cover to anybody. I'm just trying to engage with reality. As it is, and if you're asking me to put one side of reality under the rug so you could get your political agenda forward, then I don't want to be a part of that. I'm not someone who's going to sweep reality under the rug. But it gets to be a really kind of burdensome, suffocating kind of environment. And I would just urge people for as much as those pressures are real and evident, you got to be faithful to the way that you think about things and approach things, obviously considering external inputs and being in conversation with people. But if you're kind of submerging your view and your outlook in particular cases, that's not helping anybody. That's actually contributing to this system that we have, where it looks like all that there is far left and far right, when that's not what this country that's not the full story of what's happening in the political scene in this country.
Far from it. And I'm gonna name it, because I don't want to beat around the bush. Even a group like Antifa, right? We've talked about them before. They're a problem.
Yeah.
And if progressives and academics and Democrats don't seriously point out that they're a problem and don't kind of behind the scenes support them, or kind of behind the scenes, I'm actually glad they did that, because it makes me feel better. it's going to be troubling. Now, let me say this, because sometimes anytime you criticize the left, folks act like the only term they know is false equivalency. I'm not equating them to white supremacists or anybody else. On their own terms, Antifa is a problem and should not be supported in any way.
Right.
Yeah. Some of them are anarchists, not all of them. Some of them see violence as the answer to somebody disagreeing with them. That's a problem, and we cannot support it. And that goes for both sides. So what I think, you know, what I think we have to do is really just call Christians to stop spending so much time proselytizing for their own side of the culture war, and spend more time trying to disciple others through this conversation. How do we get through this? Because as a Christian, our main obligation can never be to protect ourselves. And I see that on both sides of the political spectrum, mm-hmm. where Christians are primarily worried about protecting themselves instead of discipling people through these conversations. It seems like the more negative and the more vitriolic the responses to Trump, the more we praise him.
Yeah.
I'm seeing too many statements that are not redemptive, that are not corrective, but are plainly nasty. Yeah. Now, I'm not telling you to be soft or passive. That's not even how I get down. But I'm saying that you do need to be constructive. In a real way, we are allowing Trump to change us. And that is a terrible thing.
Yeah, Justin, I think that's a good word and a good reminder. As difficult as it is to try and stay, you know, level headed. And, you know, as we've talked about before, when you mess up, fess up acknowledge, you know, like I went overboard on, you know, this tweet or in this conversation, and that could be a good learning experience for everyone. But, I think with that, man, I don't know if you have anything else you want to cover, but that's all I have, on this side.
No, I'm with you. I would just ask everybody to tighten up, you know, and if you're emotional, you can't react in a way that's Christ-like, then back up. We all have the moments we got to back away from the keyboard, back away from the mic, and just take some time to pray. We all go through that, but some of our commentary is just not helpful, and the things that we're promoting and encouraging are beneath what who we're supposed to be.
Yeah, I think that's right, man. Well, all right. Well, you know, it's going to be a good week because the Buffalo Bills won this Sunday. So I know that we're all going to be.
Apocalypse. Wasn't the apocalypse supposed to come?
We're all just going to be. Oh, man, that's right.
That's what they were predicting.
Well, just I'm not gonna let you bring me down. We're just gonna soak in this Bills win, apocalypse or not, and we'll see you next week, y'all.
Take care.
Yeah.